We promised to vaccinate without cost all of the placebo recipients if it worked, and we did. And that includes 380 who had proven zoster in the study, but who figured, well, the price was right, and even if I don't need it, I might as well get it. And the important thing there, in terms of the CDC's recommendations, the ACIP recommendations, to vaccinate in spite of a history of zoster, is we didn't notice any adverse events that were out of place in this group. And then we're following about 6,500 people, hoping to follow them out to 10 years to see how long the vaccine lasts. I'm going to skip this and say that it's now part of the routine recommended immunizations in people who are 60 and over and not immunosuppressed in the United States. Now, if that were actually done on the basis of the data that I've shown you, it would save about 280,000 new cases of zoster every year in the States and about 46,000 new cases of postherpetic neuralgia. And since some people's postherpetic neuralgia goes longer than a year, the cumulative effect would be greater. Now, we did an immunologic sub-study, and I'll finish in the next couple of slides. And the first thing we did was we showed in this study that the data that Hope Simpson hypothesized and which many people have subsequently shown, and that is the cell-mediated immunity to varicella zoster virus declines with age. We have accumulated a great deal of data showing that that continues beyond age 60. So these are intervals after age 60, and as you can see, the height of the curve, this is the baseline pre-immunization, goes down with age. Now, antibody doesn't, and that will become very important in a minute. The blue is the result of vaccination. And again, there was a good response by people of all ages, but again, it was more modest in the older group. And this is universal. I don't know of any vaccine where, in fact, 80-year-olds respond in the laboratory measures as well as 60-year-olds. But perhaps we can discuss that. Now, higher levels, and I think this is the message that I think we need to get, higher levels of CMI to VZV early in the disease correlated with reduced severity and with a lower incidence of postherpetic neuralgia. Higher levels of antibody are irrelevant. And I can't emphasize that enough, that antibody has no role in herpes zoster. You can prevent chickenpox by giving hyperimmune serum. But when you have replacement of antibody and people who are immunosuppressed with respect to cell-mediated immunity, they still have vastly increased risk and severity of zoster. Now, this is some data that is in press now in the Journal of Infectious Diseases that shows this. This is a scattergram of, in the first visit, which averaged 5 days after rash onset, a scattergram of the severity of illness scores. And as you can see, the higher the severity of illness score, this is the left-hand panel, the lower the severity of zoster. And if you look at those people who do and don't develop PHN, people who don't develop PHN, the orange, they had higher levels of cell-mediated immunity when you could first measure it than those who did develop postherpetic neuralgia. That, of course, wouldn't have surprised Hope Simpson. Now, antibody, on the other hand, was totally irrelevant. The earliest antibody responses didn't show much difference, but out at 3 weeks, people with the worst disease and with postherpetic neuralgia had much higher levels of antibody than people who had mild disease. And that's because their antibody response reflects how much antigenic stimulation they have, and that in turn reflects how much virus multiplication, which is correlated with severity. Now, there are some unanswered questions, and I'd like to address, I think, I don't know what you're going to do about the period, question and answer period, but let me touch on three that have had a major impact in the United States. First of all, and I have no fiscal relationship to Merck. I don't have stock in Merck. I don't get any money for the vaccine. And I'm not on the Merck Speakers Bureau, so I can say what I think. and that is the FDA's review in the package insert is an insult to the people who did the study, who worked very hard to have a good study. The person who evaluated it didn't understand the definition of incidence, because the single most important effect of the vaccine is a 2/3 reduction in the incidence of postherpetic neuralgia. And they didn't appreciate that. The second thing is they looked at people who were 80 and over, of whom there weren't very many. And the confidence limits went from here to Mars, which precludes any conclusions. But they raised the issue, and as a result, in many places in the United States, people 80 and over are being told, no, we shouldn't vaccinate you because it doesn't work, and besides, there are more severe side effects. Neither of those are true, and those represent issues raised in the package insert, but not answered. There are no conclusions. The problem is, with any vaccine, if you raise an issue, that's enough to make a careful physician decide not to use it. Then there are the studies of concomitant administration of Pneumovax and of influenza vaccine. And this is a study of influenza vaccine, and what it shows, the blue is separating the vaccinations. I'm sorry, the red is separating the vaccinations by 4 weeks, and the blue is simultaneously vaccinating with the two vaccines, one in each arm. And what you see is the antibody responses are comparable. Now, that tells you that varicella zoster vaccine does not interfere with the immunity to influenza. And that's very important, because antibody is a measure of protection with influenza. But it doesn't say anything about the effect of the influenza vaccine on varicella on zoster immunity, because antibody measurements I've just showed you are irrelevant. This is the best I could do because it isn't published yet, but the same study has been done with Pneumovax. And what it shows you is that there's a significant effect even on VZV antibody, and that is the fold rise, the geometric fold rise with the concomitant group was 1.9 and with the non-concomitant group was 3.1. So even measuring antibody, which isn't relevant, there's an effect. On the other hand, there really isn't much difference between the antibody responses to four different pneumococcal antigens. So what I would conclude from both of these is that if you've got your patient, give them both vaccine, give them zoster vaccine and give them either Pneumovax or influenza vaccine in the other arm. You may pay a price with zoster vaccine, but we don't know that. But you won't pay a price probably with either pneumococcal vaccine or certainly not with influenza vaccine. And then I want to close by just talking about a concept we need to think more about, and that is relative versus absolute benefit. Now, we're used to thinking about relative benefit, percent efficacy. But if you look at the severity of disease and you look at the number of years of misery that are avoided by vaccination, you'll notice that even though the burden of illness is effect of the vaccine on the burden of illness is a little bit less in the older group, the absolute benefit is substantially greater. And here is reminds you of how much more severe disease in people, how much more severe zoster is in people who are 70 and older. And again, if you were to cut the efficacy to 40% from 60% in the older age group, you'd still have more benefit in absolute years of misery reduced. And that's very important. Now, we don't have good data on people 80 and over because there weren't enough of them. But the likelihood with no decrement in an effect on PHN in the 70 and older group, which includes the 80 and overs, the likelihood that there's a sudden wall at age 80 is very small. So I'll close there. Thank you very much.